privilege and an honor to have the opportunity to come and speak before you here tonight. I think we all are aware that my days are numbered here, and I think it's it's April 24th will be my last Sunday here. I think I got that date right, don't I? It's the last Sunday in April.
2 weeks from today.
So I've said before, you know, I'll kind of finish my closing remarks then and there and show my appreciation as well, but if you want to give me something really nice, that's going to be my last day, so I'm asking for gifts. So oh my goodness, I will miss this. But thank you so much for letting me be a part of you. For is it going on 3 years now? It's probably been about 3 years, but it's been a privilege. So I hope that the message I give here tonight has been just as much as appreciative as the one the first time I gave a message to you. So, remember, if you can, June 26th, 27th, and 28th, that's going to be our weekend meeting. And we're going to have a sing on Friday at my congregation at the Westside Church of Christ. If you're able to make the drive, if I can make the drive here, you can make the drive there. So, but we're going to have a sing on Friday, and Tony Huntsman from the Morgantown congregation is going to be the preacher for that weekend. So if you have an opportunity, if you can come to the sing or come to hear his message, we'd love to have you. It'll be on 7 o'clock each night, with the exception of Sunday, and it'll just be there for morning worship. I thought I turned it on.
How about now? Oh, yeah, I guess so. All right. Tonight I want to start with this picture I have up here. If you're not familiar, this is down in Matewan, West Virginia. And this is the flood wall, and they commemorate the flood wall for the Hatfield and McCoy kind of fight, the rivalry between the Hatfields and McCoys, and it lasted 12 years. And it's very tragic how this all started and how it led to about a dozen deaths, a lot of people in prison, and even one executed for the murder of some of the, I think it was the Hatfields. And it's very sad that we see how it started off with this kind of indifference of how the Civil War was, and then it went on to a possession of a pig, and then it even went on to a situation where one of the Hatfields married a McCoy, and it caused even bigger problems then. And it seems like when we come to all these rivalries and all these issues, it seems like we want to make ourselves kind of just standoffish from someone who is the total opposite of us. And you think about a lot of Buckeye fans, I won't even say the word Michigan. Or you see kind of the discouragement, in my opinion, of how they treat Pitt Panthers. I mean, I don't like how they kind of made Sweet Caroline kind of a repulsive approach there. But it just gives us the idea, if we just look at some of these situations, how people are towards one another. And what Obadiah does, it tells us about here in these 21 little verses, it's the smallest book in the Old Testament, about how they treated this particular group and how this relationship that they have, they should not have been like that towards one another. And it talks about kind of sad consequences that will happen to Edom because of their relationship with Judah or Jacob. And you also see that it just doesn't imply with this group. It applies to all nations as you continue on reading there in those few verses of Obadiah. Maybe if you remember back in the book of Amos, we talked about how, I had one lady today tell me, she goes, well, it sounds like what you preached last week. And I said, well, if you think about what was going on in Amos, it was an outward problem that was coming into a centralized location where they shouldn't be doing these horrible things. Now, when you look at Obadiah is starting to work from the inside and work its way out. and how we should be able to do just that. When we realize if we can't do the things that we should be doing with one another, then it's going to be very hard for us to try to reach out to anybody outside the walls of this congregation. So that's what I want to talk about here tonight, the kind of tragedy that happens to Edom, why it happens to Edom, and what can we take from this as individuals and children of God. One of the things that we start off here is about how Edom is going to be destroyed. And if you look, I'm trying to adjust something here, I apologize. If you look there in Obadiah verse 5, it says, if thieves came to you, if plunderers came by night, how you have been destroyed. Would they not steal only enough for themselves? If grape gatherers came to you, would you not leave gleanings? And what he's trying to talk about here is, if you look at certain situations where thieves would come and steal something, they wouldn't steal everything. They would just steal things that they feel that is valuable. And if you look at when it comes to harvest, you know you don't take everything. You just take the best of these things. And what God is telling us through Obadiah to tell the people of Edom is there's not going to be nothing left. When he comes and he plunders and he pillages this community, there's not going to be anything left of these people. There's not going to be nothing to say they have value in something. And then when you go into verses 8 and 9, it tells us about how the idea that they're going to be able to outwit or outmaneuver or outsmart or even outmuscle the enemy, it's going to come to realize you don't have God and you're not going to be able to have any help either. As you listen to Roland read there, he talks about how God tells these people, he's talking about the enemies of Edom, and he's talking about the enemies of Judah, and he's talking about these people who they thought that these individuals were their friends, and he tells them, let's go fight them. And when we go fight them, let's show no mercy, because as you remember in our previous study, Edom didn't show mercy to anyone. And they didn't show any pity towards anyone. And if you read later on, and we'll kind of hit on this towards the end, you see that they're going to get the exact same thing that they have been given to everybody else. And the thing is, they may be very savvy politicians. It's not going to help them this time. They may be strong militant men. It's not going to help them this time. They may be very diplomatic men. It's not going to help them this time. No matter how strong or how cunning or how well they could defend themselves, because we see it talks about them being on these cliffs and thinking because they have the high ground, they're not going to be able to be conquered. But God tells us, yes, you are. That's a very sad situation for Edom. But why do they go through this? Well, we got to go a couple few verses down. And the reason is very simple, is because of what the violence they have done to their brother Jacob. Shame shall cover you, and you shall be cut off forever. And on that day that you stood aloof, on that day the strangers carried off his wealth, and foreigners entered his gates and cast lots for Jerusalem, you were like one of them. These individuals were careless of their arrogance. These individuals were guilty of being thinking that they're better than everybody else. These individuals were guilty of stealing things from them. When the enemy was coming and robbing them, they were robbing them too. When these individuals came to murder them, they came and murdered them too. When these individuals came to betray them, they were willing to betray them as well. And it was just being like everybody else. And because they were like everybody else, God says, I'm going to condemn you for it. And of all the individuals that we have talked about in these punishments, we can see that Edom is going to be the group that suffers more punishment than all the other ones. And the reason being is because of what they've done to their brother. We're familiar with Jacob and Esau. And we're familiar that when we talk about Jacob, we could go back and say, well, that's talking about Judah. And when we go back and talk about Esau, we say, well, that's talking about Edom. And for us to understand this, you must understand what the relationship was like between Jacob and Esau. And we know there for the longest time, it was not good. And because of that, you see that that has been something that has held on to him for years. You know, my son's been a preacher now for a little bit, and we sat down and had lunch in the afternoon, and he was talking about, you know, trying to do certain things when it comes to dealing with certain individuals. And I said, here's what you need to do. First off, you don't need to be like me. I said, if I want you to be anybody, I said, I want you to be a child of God. Having my last name does not give you the entitlement to do whatever you think is right and use that as an excuse to do whatever you want. So many times we take that title and we think that we could just freely use it to excuse ourselves to do right or to do wrong. Or if we have a slip of the tongue, or we have some, or we do something in error, or we feel careless with our words, we say, well, that's okay because I'm a Stevens. No. Let's not take these titles like we have seen so many times in the past in the New Testament and use that to say that this is why these individuals are who they are. We need to be children of God. We need to be children of Christ. We need to be followers of Christ. We don't need our last name to hold that title. We need Christ's name to carry that title. But the thing is, Edom has carried the characteristics of Esau for quite some time. Look at Genesis chapter 26. In Genesis chapter 26, you see that he got rid of his birthright. And it seemed like he was trying to cause some problems in the family. And he marries a Hittite woman. And they're told very plainly, of all the women that you can have in the nation, don't marry these individuals. And it wasn't because she was going to be a problem for the family. It was because they was going to draw them away from God. And he tells them, don't marry this woman. Well, what does he do? He does it anyways. Maybe sometimes we see that individual that marries someone and we say to ourselves, they just married that individual just to make mom and dad mad. Well, here's a great example of that right here. Because you see that when they done this, when he did this, they made the life bitter for Isaac and Rebekah, his parents. And then when you go another chapter, you see that there is a moment for him to obtain his blessing. It's interesting that he disregarded the blessing, or disregarded the inheritance, but he was not willing to disregard this blessing. And there was something to be set up in order for him to obtain this blessing. But you see that Jacob tricked his father. And he received the blessing instead. And then you see that he becomes exceedingly great and bitter. And he cries. And we understand that when someone cries in this kind of anger, it's not something pleasant. It is a cry of bitterness. It is a cry of great and bitter cry. And he is angry because he has lost his blessing now. To where in the next few verses down, he says to himself, the days of mourning for my father are approaching. And then I'll kill my brother Jacob. Brethren, the tragedy that we see too many times when it comes to this is we try to justify our wrongdoing because somebody has done us wrong. Well, I was a jerk to them because they was a jerk to me. The reason why I did this is because someone done something wrong to me. And if you remember our study back in Amos, he tells us that just because somebody does something wrong does not justify you to do something wrong as well. That's where God comes into play. But look, if you will, when we go to Obadiah. in verse 12 and 13. He tells him, he goes, do not gloat over the day of your brother and the day of his misfortune. Do not rejoice over the people of Judah and the day of their ruin. Do not boast in the day of distress. Do not enter the gate of my people in the day of their calamity. Do not gloat over his disaster in the day of his calamity. Do not loot his wealth in the day of his calamity. Do you ever notice that the reason that Edom fell into an outside attack is because they failed to do what they needed to do between themselves? Edom is still a part of Jacob. This is not a relationship like with the Assyrians. This is not like a relationship like they had with the Egyptians. This is not like a relationship that they have with the Babylonians. This is a relationship that they had for quite some time. And you see that we'll talk here about how they made this agreement that they were still going to look out for each other. And for some reason, for one reason or another, they decided to break that trust, to break that bond. And they got to a point where it was like, we don't want nothing to do with them. But that's your brother. One nation of these two is going to make it their effort that the other one will fail. And because of that, one is never, ever going to be able to come back to God. One thing I picked up in my little looking at it between Jacob and Esau is how Jacob interacted with Esau at this moment where he comes out of the blue to visit him. You see that the messengers returned to Jacob and they said to him, he says, we came to your brother Esau and he is coming to meet you and there are 400 men with him. Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. Ask yourself this. I think I know the majority of this congregation pretty well, but I don't know everybody. But think about the times that when somebody walks through that door, you're happy to see them. Now think of the times that somebody has walked through that door and you'll be happy when they leave. We have all experienced individuals that just thrills our heart to be around. But we've also expressed or have experienced individuals when we're with them, we become afraid and distressed. How are they going to be towards me? Are they going to be mean? Are they going to be critical? Are they going to be individuals that are going to show these characteristics of God? Or am I going to have to walk on eggshells around them? And I'm going to have to be careful what I say. The thing is, Jacob is aware that he's coming. And he has every reason to be mad. So much so that he decides when he is going to go meet him, he splits up everything he has. And he says within himself, I do this because one will be able to escape. But the one thing I want us to keep our eye on here, this is just a little bit off the subject of my study in Obadiah. The thing about Jacob is he goes to meet Esau head on. This could cost him his life. And he is willing to confront his brother. Brethren, we don't have any life-threatening situations where we have to deal with difficult individuals in our congregation. But it is necessary. There is challenges in every congregation. There's going to be some individuals it's going to be difficult to deal with. But not once we find an example when it comes to having the opportunity to deal with it. And actually, you have more than two opportunities. But after that, if you recall, I think it's in Titus or Timothy, that after a while, you just stop. But it never tells us that we don't do it. Remember Matthew chapter 18, when we come to an individual that sins against us, remember that it is an opportunity for us to be able to talk to them one-on-one. And there's an opportunity to bring two or more with us. And then there's an opportunity to bring the church before this. But we see that there is opportunities when it comes to this, because Christ wants peace in his church and Christ wants brethren gained in this church, that we do these things in order to obtain this heavenly hope, not just for myself, but for that brother who is stumbling. That is the greatest thing in the kingdom. And he says, woe to those who cause offenses to them. But many times, brethren, when it comes to dealing with difficult individuals, we do a few things. One, we probably just try to avoid them altogether. Or we say to ourselves that the only time we're going to talk to them is if they talk to me. Or we say to ourselves that we go and we deal with it, but we don't deal with it in a loving fashion or even a manner that is pleasing unto God. We come to him very vindictive and trying to push our efforts and trying to push our points. But look how Jacob handles Esau. He knows he's wrong. And Esau's wrong too. Don't think that there's somebody right or somebody wrong here. No, there's problems with both. But Jacob makes an effort to say, what can I do to find favor in your eyes? What can we do to resolve this? When I drove truck for Lowe's, you know, always loved driving truck when it's nice like today. It was always nice to have the windows roll down and the wind blow through your hair, what hair I have left. But probably about 3 weeks ago, I wouldn't like to drive in this weather because it was rainy, it was muddy, and it was cold. And I usually carried more than one or two deliveries on my vehicle. I had a flatbed truck and I had a forklift on the back of it. And sometimes I would go in that muddy muck, somebody's house, they want me to go on the hillside and go through the yard and tear it up and put something there in the backyard. Well, usually that mud stays on my tires. And then my next delivery has to deal with it too. And of course, I went to this one lady's place where she told me to put it on a driveway, and of course, I got mud all over her driveway. She called the store. And I answered the call. And I just very plainly said to her this. What can we do to make this better? She made a suggestion. I said, absolutely. That was the end of it. It wasn't this idea that, well, don't you know how bad the weather's out today? Or couldn't you find somewhere else where I didn't have to drive on your driveway with all this mud? Or try to justify what I did with the delivery. Or try to tell her how wrong she was to tell me where to put it at. It doesn't matter. We have a problem. Let's try to fix it. And that we did. Brethren, that is how easy the problem can be. We kind of get situations in there, we make things complicated because maybe we don't like dealing with controversy. We don't like dealing with difficulty. But the things that we see time and time again in Scripture is there is always going to be difficulty as long as there is evil that comes into the church or tries to come into the church. There's always going to be difficulty with one another because we don't agree on everything. I know, brethren, I've been to quite a few congregations now. And, you know, and I've had to say goodbye to a lot of congregations. And it's not because it's been bad. It's just because everybody wanted to move on. Somebody got a preacher. Somebody started to do things, and I started a different work. It was just, there was never this situation where we left in anger. The thing is that we get in this situation where we think that we have to fight with each other, and we don't. And there is always going to be these difficulties, but we can work these things out. It's just, we got to ask ourselves, what's the willingness to do so? Because look how bad it was, or think about this. How long they held this issue? And Esau kind of fixed this with Jacob. But for one reason or another, and we see not only in Obadiah, but we also see this in the book of Psalms, where David tells us about how they wouldn't let them go through at times. And we read about this in Hebrews, where the Hebrew writer reminds us about how he loved Jacob, but he despised Esau. And it's because they held on to things that they don't need to hold on to, because we're about the kingdom of heaven, and we're not about petty arguments, and we should not be about devouring and biting one another. Are you willing to make a humble request to those that are struggling with things, and make a humble request to find favor in their eyes? Go to Philippians chapter 2. One of my brethren friends, he writes articles all the time now. His name is Matt Allen. He's over in Cornerstone in Kettering, Ohio. And while I was doing this study on Obadiah, he wrote about what the disease is that we don't know about in the church. And I like to read a little bit what he says here. Because, brethren, we always think, well, we wouldn't do anything violent like Edom does. We wouldn't do anything horrible like Edom does. But brethren, we do things to one another that maybe we don't realize we're doing to one another. And he says this. He goes, here's what the disease looks like in church life. It's the person who can't celebrate someone else's success without quietly measuring it against their own. It's the member who has already decided what the church should do before the conversation even starts and stops listening the moment the elders decide to go a different direction. It's the need to win the argument more than you need to protect the relationship. It's showing up to be served rather than to serve. It's caring more about your seat at the table than about those who does not have one yet. And what makes this dangerous? We think none of us is doing this. Remember what it said in verse 3. Your pride and your heart has deceived you. That's what makes it so dangerous. Selfish ambition never announces itself. It never dresses up in reasonable clothes. It sounds like conviction. It feels like passion. But underneath, it's just you wanting your way, wanting your recognition, wanting to matter more than someone else. And remember what I say about Philippi. I think Philippi is one of the greatest examples of what a church should be. But remember, every congregation that we read about here in the New Testament has room for improvement. And even though he calls them his crown of joy, he tells us here in verse 2, he goes, you can make my joy complete. Complete my joy by being of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Don't do anything out of selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only on his own interests, but also the interests of others. Paul says that that kind of joy in the church makes it complete. The The one person who puts down the need to be right, to be recognized, to be first, and picks up the towel instead. That's how I should start. One of the challenges that Brother Allen has suggested on how this could spread is start a relationship with someone in the congregation that you don't have any relationship with whatsoever. Don't go for the first guy that likes the same team as you do. Don't go after the same guy who likes the same music as you do or the same gal. Go somebody off track. Because, brother, I'll tell you right now, that's the one that you don't realize is screaming inside for something. Yesterday, I got to pay my respects to my friend Mike. And it's been 8 months since we found out he took his own life. And they find his memorial yesterday. And the thing with Mike was Mike never expressed any anger. Mike never expressed any struggles. He never had any issues. And every time I saw Mike, he was in a situation where it was just like happenstance. I saw him at a baseball game in Pittsburgh. I saw him at the Lowe's in Marietta. I saw him at a place we used to hang around with when we was in college. It was just these simple little places that he would just pop up and just leave again. And we think when it comes to their struggles, we think that the ones who deal with suicide or we would take it a step further, the individuals that struggle with drug addiction, we think that there's some kind of just low individual that has nothing better to do. And those are the individuals that they're not going to be able to be tended to. And the sad thing is, Mike wasn't a lowly individual. Mike was well-loved. And Mike was an airline pilot for a Boeing 777. And we didn't realize it until the day we found out he took his life. The person who battles drug addiction, you may not realize it until it's inevitably too late sometimes too. But it doesn't happen to lesser people. It happens to people. And what the plea here with Philippi is that we have brethren that we don't realize they have struggles. And we don't realize the dangers that they're falling in, the traps that they're falling in. We don't realize that maybe they may be strong one day, but they may succumb to sin the next. We need to be a one another church, brethren. And this is not just for Wellsburg, it's for all congregations. Because if you look, he tells us here in this next verse, he tells us in verse 15, he says, you can't solve, or the impression I get from verse 15, you can't solve these problems if you can't solve the problems within your own brethren. How in the world are you going to be able to help someone overcome a struggle in their spiritual life in your congregation and think that if you can't do that, how in the world do you think you're going to be able to do it out there with somebody that's a total stranger? How are you going to be able to show someone how important it is to come together and worship God and put everything in the world aside if we're not willing to do it ourselves? I don't know much of Andy, other than you like him. Must be a great guy. But the thing is, there's going to be some things that you're not going to care much about with Andy. And that's okay. There's probably things that I do that you probably don't like either. And that's okay. I don't know any congregation that has 100% right behind their preacher. And that's okay. It doesn't hurt my feelings one bit. It doesn't hurt my feelings one bit. You want a preacher as well. You need a preacher. But when this guy comes in here with his wife and his family, and he's willing to commit himself, and try to do the work and try to build you up. I pray, I hope, it's my prayer, that you'll do the exact same thing to him. I don't know what, if he likes sleepovers or not, but maybe you ought to ask. But the thing is, don't ask him that. Probably think I'm weird. But the thing is, brethren, wherever this guy brings to you, take it. And give him everything you can to show him that you want him here. Or you won't have him long. And brethren, that's what I'm trying to say. If we can't build ourselves up here, we're not going to be able to do anything out there. No matter how hard we try. If we can't do it here, you're not going to be able to do it out there. That's why you see God tell Obadiah to tell not just Edom, but he tells them all nations, the day the Lord is coming. And what has been done, it's going to be done to them. And when they see Edom, and when they see Edom, they'll have nothing left, and they're in a place of misery, and they're in a bad situation, they're going to realize that the Lord was here. And it doesn't matter what kind of situation that they were in, they were punished for the things that they've done wrong. And so many times we say to ourselves, we can't preach stuff like that because people don't like hearing stuff like that. But the thing is, Obadiah has been telling him this. Amos has been telling him this. Jeremiah has been telling him this. Ezekiel has been telling him this. Daniel has been telling him this. These prophets are telling him that they have to fix these things because God is coming. And if we're not willing to fix it, you can't be a part of him. Do you ever notice, and I said this last week, have you ever noticed God at every end of every prophecy, he is letting you know, I'm still here. And all you got to do, he has his hand reached out to you. All you got to do is go out there and grab it. And he tells them here in this one verse in 18, that these individuals are going to be punished. Judah's not going to get away scot-free. Egypt won't get away scot-free. Syria won't get away scot-free. Babylon won't get away scot-free. These individuals won't get away scot-free. But one thing, or two things are very distinct in verse 18. He says, you're going to be punished for your sin, Judah. But you're going to be able to get back. We all hit rock bottom. And God says, I'm going to give you the opportunity to get back up. Except he doesn't say that to Edom. Jacob shall be fire, the house of Joseph a flame, and the house of Esau stubble. They shall burn them and consume them, and there shall be no survivor for the house of Esau, for the Lord has spoken. Brethren, I should put fear in our hearts if we're not doing the right thing before the eyes of God. We have an opportunity right now to come to God. We could either be buried in baptism. We see that Jesus will remind us, teach him to observe all things, command, lo, I'm with you always, even unto the end. And one of those things that has been taught, that has been observed, is baptism. And how so many in this world today could make the argument that this is not something we need, but Scripture tells us something completely different. And it's available for you here tonight. Maybe there's one here that needs to repent. And remember, the opportunity to change is right before us. And, you know, when we got into Matthew chapter 18, it reminds us that there's an opportunity to come back. He'll talk about binding what is bound and loose what is loose. And one of the things he's talking about here is if that individual comes back, let him back. But he needs to be the individual, this one that has caused this offense, this individual who is willing to come back. He needs to let us know he wants to be back. There's not this kind of just acknowledge like, well, if he comes back, he comes back. No, no, no. Durr has talked about this relationship with the church and this individual. And we have an opportunity to do that here tonight as well. We have an opportunity to pray. I've been telling you about my friend John, who's a softball umpire. And it's been very wonderful to be able to spend time with him. He actually came to my game yesterday when I was umpire. He's able to move. He's able to walk. He's able to twist his arms around. He's able to do all the things except speak. And that's been one of the great challenges for him right now, is just to be able to talk. He's getting better day by day. But he greatly appreciates the time that we sat down and prayed with him. He greatly appreciates to know that other individuals is out there praying for him. Brethren, that could be you too. But all you have to do is ask. And it's available for you here tonight, right now. All the things that is offered to you, take this moment now to request these things while we stand, while we sing.